You're listening to Radio MD. She's a chiropractic holistic physician, best-selling author, international speaker, entrepreneur, and talk show host. She's Dr. Suzanne Bennett. It's time now for Wellness for Life Radio. Here's Dr. Suzanne.
For most of us, sunsets are lovely to experience, and we celebrate this time of transition from the stresses and chaos of the day to the most subdued and relaxed nature of evening. But for many elderly people who suffer from Alzheimer's disease or other forms of dementia, it can be a time of increased memory loss, confusion, agitation, and even anger. This is commonly known as sundowner's syndrome. And today we have sleep expert Dr. Michael Bruce, a clinical psychologist and best-selling author of The Power of When, to give us more insight about this condition, but also how it's actually important for all of us to understand and improve our own natural circadian rhythms. Thanks for being here on Wellness for Life, Dr. Bruce.
Oh, thanks for having me. I love the show. I listen to it often, and I enjoy all of your content, so it's a real honor.
Thank you. Thank you. Love all the things that you do. And your book is awesome. You know, the book that you've written, it was like 2 years ago. Is that right? 2 years ago, The Power of When.
Yep.
Lots of great info. Yep. I want to dig into that later. But before we do that, you know what sundowner syndromes? It really sounds a lot like what mothers call the witching hour. You know, when babies get really fussy and agitated and you can't console them for hours. I mean, even with my own son, Cody, my husband and I mean, our you know, only child. And for me, of course, being a new mother, we would have to take turns walking him in a stroller for 2 hours to calm him down and get him to sleep. It was really a nightmare. I mean, so the sundowner syndrome, is it at all similar to that?
Well, I would say that you could say it's similar, but it's very, very different. So when we look at what's going on in sundowner syndrome, as you stated before, you know, this is a time when the sun goes down and our patients who are already neurologically compromised become very agitated, restless, in some cases even combative, and it really stemmed out of problems that were happening in nursing homes. What they would discover is as the sun went down, the patients got crazy, they got agitated, they got very difficult to manage, and so that made it extremely difficult for them. Whereas babies are having a very different situation. Obviously, they're not neurologically compromised. But yes, there is a witching hour, if you will. The good news on the baby side of it is that the babies eventually fall asleep. The unfortunate situation on the sundowning syndrome side of it is that in a lot of cases, they may or may not be able to fall asleep, and it can have some pretty significant consequences.
So when this is happening, you mentioned about, of course, when there's the neurological compromise for any individual, and it really doesn't even, I think, have to be just Alzheimer's or dementia. I understand that it affects even Parkinson's conditions, any forms of neuro conditions, right? So then what is happening, let's say, the physiology of the brain, or actually pathophysiology, which is triggering these emotional and mood behaviors?
So it's not 100% clear, but there appear to be a few ideas about sort of where it comes from and sort of what's been happening here. One of the biggest things we think has to do with the disruption of our overall circadian rhythm. And so when you have a patient who's got some type of neurocompromise, whether it's Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, delirium, whatever, the pineal gland, which is that kind of that little peanut that's about the dead center of your brain, which releases melatonin based on a very particular cycle, that seems to be the crux of what's going on. We know that as people get older, their melatonin production begins to decline. And we also know that the cornea on their eye begins to yellow. And those two factors lead to folks in their senior years having less melatonin production and a more variable circadian rhythm. Now, when you overlay neurocompromise on top of that, that's kind of where the mess seems to happen. And so, believe it or not, there are some cases of sundowner syndrome that we can fix with light therapy, the same way we do with jet lag, where we actually have special lights that we can give patients to be used with their caretakers in the evening to help them readjust their circadian rhythm. And believe it or not, melatonin as a supplement can actually has been shown to be helpful there as well. Of course, we also have to make sure that their sleeping schedules are more regularized. when we have people who are in a neurocompromised situation and they're in a living environment, a lot of times they're kind of left to sleep, nap kind of haphazardly during the day. And that can also contribute to this as well.
So, you know, you mentioned something that was super interesting. You said the yellowing of cornea. Now, is it because the yellowing of cornea changes the ability of the light to penetrate the eyes and back into the optic nerve? Wow.
Exactly.
That's a new thing I just learned.
Yeah, and it was funny when I learned it. I learned it while I was reading some research on Fuchs syndrome, F-U-C-H-S syndrome. And this is, I had a patient who came in who her circadian rhythms were completely wonky. And once she had a corneal transplant, everything went back to normal. And so I started looking up corneal transplant research and discovered that many, many people are finding that after they have corneal transplants, that all of a sudden their sleep gets better. And we think a lot of that has to do with the ability of light to come in the morning and turn off that melatonin faucet.
Wow, that's really fascinating. So let's talk a little bit about circadian rhythm, because, you know, we talk about sleep with a rhythm, but circadian rhythm is the biorhythms of your entire body from it's all day long, actually. So can you explain a little bit of what circadian rhythm is and, you know, how as humans, we're very much like animals. I mean, we are animals, but just like in nature, our body runs with the natural rhythm of the sun and the moon.
Yeah, exactly. So the way I think of circadian rhythms is kind of like the way I think of Grand Central Station in New York. So if any of our listeners have ever been into a big train station like Grand Central Station, there are literally hundreds of trains coming in and going out at any given time, but they all kind of go into this one centralized place. And that centralized place dictates when do they come in and when do they leave. The same holds true with our circadian rhythm. We have one master clock, which happens to be in our brain, but we actually have hundreds of little mini clocks all over our body. And all of these send signals to the master clock, and then the master clock sends signals back down. So if for example, one of the clocks was off, like in the Grand Central train station analogy, and a train was going in at a time when it shouldn't, well, it's going to backlog a whole bunch of other trains. And that's exactly what we see happening in our body. Is these rhythms all have a great way of working together. But if there's anything that can block that or push that rhythm off in one direction or another, that's where we seem to have problems. But there's a rhythm for disease. There's a rhythm for heart rate. There's a rhythm for brain function. There's a rhythm for the common cold. There's a rhythm for mood. I mean, honestly, I could keep listing them on and on. It's pretty amazing.
Wow. You know, that's such a great analogy that you explained, because truthfully, you know, millions of us and probably most of us have rhythmic problems. And that's part of the reason why sleep is such an epidemic in our country and all across the world. And I know, there was a book a long time ago I read. It was called Lights Out. Lights out. And it talked a lot about the details regarding the history of how the light bulb totally ruined us, you know?
It's so funny that you mentioned Edison and the light bulb, because he is actually quoted as saying sleep is unimportant. And part of his impetus or his motivation for creating the light bulb was because he felt as though in the future that sleep would be completely unnecessary. That guy couldn't have been more wrong.
So wrong. And, you know, with your expertise and what you know, what can sundowners do, first of all? What can they do? Because we are now looking at Alzheimer's as, I think, the fifth disease that is affecting the country now, if not the world.
No question.
Right?
Yeah, no question about it. So there's a couple of things that we know that make a lot of sense. Number one is for these individuals to have a consistent sleeping schedule, as well as a consistent daily routine. The more routine that they're in, the less agitation we have a tendency to see with these people. Now, I mean, I get it. It's hard to fill up an entire day, but really concentrating on making sure that they go to sleep at the same time, they wake up at the same time is important. Another big thing is to watch out for what we call over-napping. Because a lot of these people are more sedentary, they have a tendency to fall asleep quite a bit. And their caretakers, to be very honest with you, it's much easier to take care of a sleeping patient than it is an awake patient.
Such a good point.
And so unfortunately, that has a tendency to be what happens. And so these patients nap too much during the day, which of course makes it difficult for them to sleep at night. Caffeine can actually be helpful. It should be limited, but it can be helpful. Caffeine can be helpful in the mornings, but you really have to watch caffeine in the afternoons and early evenings because that could, again, prevent sleep. Melatonin, there is actually some evidence to show that melatonin supplementation can be helpful. But the leading treatment that I have used historically has been light therapy, where you can actually get a light box. They're commercially available, and there are now treatments that are the American Academy of Sleep Medicine have published specifically for sundowner syndrome. So if there are practitioners out there or if there are people out there who have this going on in their family, if you can, talk with a sleep specialist because they have tried and true protocols that can be very helpful for this.
Oh, I'm a big believer in sleep therapy, excuse me, light therapy. But when I first started my practice 29 years ago, Michael, I ended up working in an office where there was absolutely no light coming in. It was one of those cubicle offices in the middle of the office space. And I actually got what a condition called seasonal affective disorder. And I was never that way. I'm someone who's always outdoors, outside, running around, exercising, etc. And I found this really awesome little visor with light coming into my eyes.
Yep.
This visor saved my life. I am not kidding. I thought I was like so depressed. And there are all kinds of great little gadgets out there that you can use.
There really are, and I personally use a light box that I bought off of Amazon for less than $100. It was called the Go Light, G-O-L-I-T-E. I have no association or affiliation with the company, but I love this product because I've used it quite often. That's been super duper helpful one for me. There are, and the thing is that there's a specific wavelength of light, a blue light in particular, that's important. So making sure that you have the right type of light therapy. Also, there's something else that's kind of the opposite of what we're talking about, but is also interesting, is, you know, the summer solstice. So when you look at the summer solstice and you look at the length of daylight in a particular day, that too can have an effect on our ability to be able to fall asleep at night. So while light is important for us in the mornings and during the day, we also have to calm down our light exposure, if you will, in the evenings, because we need to allow that natural melatonin machine to kind of kick into gear again.
Right, right. You know, what I recommend to my patients nowadays, because there's still everyone's on their computers and iPads in the evening, getting their emails in. And so I have them take these, wear these blue light blockers. They look very orangish, amber looking. You look kind of funky, like you're a Bono in the evening, it does work. As soon as you put it on, man, your eyes start to get tired.
Yep. I have both of my children wearing them starting around 8 o'clock in the evening because, you know, they're looking at computer screens all day.
Exactly.
And it helps reduce eye strain, number one, which is very important, especially for young kids. We're seeing young kids now having to have prescriptive lenses much earlier. And I think a lot of that has to do with the eye strain associated with computers, as well as this blue light that they're constantly being exposed to. So everybody in my family has a pair of blue blockers. Not everybody uses them, but I've really gotten my son and my daughter to use them quite well.
That's great. That's great. You know, you spoken earlier about the rhythms of all the different types of rhythms of disease and moods and sleep. But you know what? I find that one of the rhythms that really help with your circadian rhythm, but sleep, is actually eating properly and at the right time. Can you just touch on that a bit? And if it's in your book,
sure.
I believe it is. So can you touch on that?
Yeah, it is. Absolutely. So there was a really interesting study looking at mice. And I don't usually look at rodent studies, you know, to humans, but this one was particularly fascinating. So they took genetically identical mice and they put them in three different cages and they gave them the same amount and same caloric content of food. One, group one, free running. They could eat whenever they wanted. And they all had a certain amount of food. The second was only given exposure to their food in a 12-hour period. The third was only given exposure to their food in an 8-hour period. What they discovered, remember, genetically identical mice, same caloric content, same amount of food. When allowed to eat whenever you want, you actually gained weight. When eating within a 12-hour period, you maintained weight. And when eating within an 8-hour period, you lost weight. These are genetically identical mice with the exact same amount and calories of food. So timing turns out to be critical for our overall health, especially when it comes to nutrition, weight gain, and weight loss.
Well, how about, though, if it's an 8-hour, let's say that if we eat within 8 hours, that means you eat around 12 or 11, let's say, and then you got to eat before 8. These are all the meals you're talking about, right? And then how does that relate to sleep then? If you can get, does it relate at all to sleep, you think, that you can get better sleep?
Well, I think it can, and I think it does. There's a couple things to think about. So first of all, we as humans overeat almost all the time. The amount of food, when you see the supersized drinks and the supersized French fries and the supersized this and that, we eat far too much food and we eat food too often. And so understanding how much food we need and working it out in a time frame makes a lot of sense. When we look at it from a sleeping perspective, remember, the body was not meant to digest food lying down. It was meant to digest food either sitting or standing. And so by stopping eating by, let's say, 7 o'clock at night, let's say you start at 11 and you stop at 7, what you end up doing is allowing your body to digest the food and get it down into the lower intestines, which is where all of the absorption is going to occur anyway. Also, you should never go to bed full, but you should also never go to bed hungry. So making sure that you stay hydrated. Now, remember, hydration does not need to be in this 8-hour time frame. Hydration should be if you're awake, you should be hydrating. Sleep actually makes you dehydrated. Most people don't know this, but as you breathe out the humidity in your breath, actually you lose almost a liter of water each night. So the very first thing I ask people to do when they wake up in the morning is not drink a cup of coffee, is to drink a bottle of water, because that helps hydrate them, and it also helps with sleep as well. The final thing that we should talk about in terms of food and sleep is looking at, are certain foods helpful for sleep and are certain foods not so helpful for sleep? So there are a couple of myths out there. One of them is turkey. People always ask me all the time, well, if I eat a turkey sandwich, will that help me sleep? The theory is that tryptophan, which is what's in turkey, is what's going to make you feel sleepy. Honestly, you'd have to eat a 26-pound turkey to get enough tryptophan in order to make you feel sleepy, number one. And tryptophan doesn't even work well in the presence of protein, so it's probably not a great idea. The second one that people ask me about all the time is warm milk. Does warm milk make you sleepy? Same idea here, is it's got tryptophan in it. You'd have to drink almost a gallon and a half of warm milk. Now, why does warm milk make people feel sleepy? It's really more about who gave you the warm milk when you first started drinking it. It was probably a mother or a grandmother or somebody who was very caring and very loving, and you associate that product with that care and that love, and that makes you feel calm and relaxed, and that helps you sleep. The reason people have a tendency to be sleepy after Thanksgiving, in my humble estimation, is because they've been cooking that meal all week, their in-laws have been in town driving them crazy, and everybody is finally gone, and they can sit on the couch and relax.
I totally see that happening. I mean, that's like the typical thing, you know, when you overeat too, right. When you overeat, you just feel like, oh my gosh, I cannot move. And let me get on that couch and watch TV.
Yeah. So, and it's such an uncomfortable feeling, you know, right. and that also can lead to sleeplessness, right? If you've got a big, full belly of food, you know, it's not easy to fall asleep when you're lying on your side. It pulls you to the side. I mean, you know, also, by the way, let's not forget gastroesophageal reflux, right? Eating too close to bedtime, especially certain foods, right? Like acidic foods, like tomato-based foods and spicy foods and things like that. All of that can cause gastroesophageal reflux, which, of course, can be very disruptive to sleep.
Right. You know, I actually use, for me, sleep has been probably one of my, conditions that I've had after a head injury, and it was been so difficult for the last 8 years, but I've mastered it. I've gotten better and better and better. And with your information, it's been so helpful too. But one thing that's really helpful I find is actually potassium. It's one of those, you know, everyone talks about magnesium at night, but I found that potassium really stimulates and optimizes the parasympathetic nervous system. And just drinking or eating foods with high levels of potassium helps at night. And for me, even a cup of tomato juice cup of tomato juice can have over 800 milligrams of potassium, as long as it's not the highly salty stuff. But so food can definitely control how well you sleep and how deep you sleep. Well, tell us a bit about...
I was just going to say, I would agree with you there about potassium. And one of my favorite recipes, if I can, I'd like to share it with your audience.
Yeah.
I call it banana tea. All right. So it turns out that bananas are loaded with not only potassium, but magnesium as well. And I know a lot of people are talking about magnesium, but hear me out. It turns out that the amount of magnesium that's in the fruit is very low compared to the amount of magnesium that's actually in the peel of the banana itself. And so one of the things that I have people do is they go out and they buy an organic banana. They wash it off, cut off the tip and cut off the stem, cut it in half, leave the fruit in and the peel on it. Okay. Then you put it into about 2 or 3 cups of boiling water and you boil it until it turns brown. And then you steep it and you drink the water. It's loaded with both potassium and magnesium. I call it banana tea. You got to really like bananas because it's very banana flavored. And it is a great substitute to chamomile tea or sleepy time tea or whatever the tea is that many people have out there. And I get kids to drink it, which is great. I've got one mom who came up with this fantastic idea. She made the banana tea during the day, and then she put it into these popsicle molds with the popsicle sticks, and then she gives her kids a banana popsicle at night before bed, and it works like a charm.
Wow, I love that recipe. I'm going to have to try that tonight. Seriously, that's
you'll
a great
it.
One.
I promise you, you'll love it.
That's a great one. Gosh, we can talk so much about all that you can share. You got great information, Dr. Bruce. Where can we find more about you, your work, and your book, The Power of When?
Sure. So if people are looking for more information about me, you can come to my website, which is just thesleepdoctor.com. And if you're looking for more information about my book, you can check out my book website, which is thepowerofwhen.com.
Yes, I believe right there. You could also, there's a quiz. Isn't there a quiz that people can take to see about their sleep?
Yeah, there's a free quiz that people can take, and you can find that on The Power of When or thepowerofwhenquiz.com, either one.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Michael. You are a wealth of information. What a great interview. So appreciate it. Now, if you really enjoyed this interview today, please share this show with your friends and family and go to iTunes and give us some of your feedback. The support is greatly appreciated. And do connect with me on Instagram or Facebook. And if you need any guidance on and want to dig deeper into your chronic health issues, I do phone consults, Skyping with people all around the world. And you can just go to my website, drsuzanne.com, and find my contact info there. Until next time, go out there and live your best life today, full of energy, enthusiasm, and ultimate health and wellness. This is Dr. Suzanne sharing natural strategies on the Wellness for Life show right here on Radio MD. Stay well.